and had a show, but he said no. Our next guest was a guy I got to know on the radio, Kaplis and Silverman show days. He'd come in to fill in. He was exceptional as a radio talk show host. Last time I saw him before today was at the funeral of a great man, Jim Peters. And I want to talk about Jim Peters because I couldn't help but be struck last Friday at that packed St. Thomas More Church. It was a Catholic mass. It was beautiful. It was moving. And I couldn't help but think that Jim Peters, who was a man of faith, wrestled with a capital punishment decision. And certain people have to wrestle with that decision. You know, it's easy to spout off about the great social issues of the day, like abortion. You can say I'm pro-abortion or I'm pro-choice, I'm pro-life. But until you're pregnant, maybe you really don't know how you feel with an unwanted pregnancy. Or God forbid, you're told that the fetus has a problem. You might think about it in a different way. The same thing happens with humans confronting capital punishment. It did for me when I was asked to take on a capital punishment case in Denver. I had thought about it, but then I really had to think about it and wrestle with it. And I expect Jim Peters did the same thing. And I expect all those jurors who decided the fate of Nathan Dunlap, they probably had sleepless nights and they wrestled with their conscience. And all the things that John Hickenlooper went through, they went through, but they made a decision of capital punishment was appropriate. And then the people I think about most are the people who, the one gentleman who survived the attempt to kill him, the family members of the victim, the four victims. And George Brockler is in the studio today. Jim Peters, I think, was a chief deputy. Bob Gallagher probably made the decision on Nathan Dunlap. Carol Chambers, who succeeded Jim Peters, made the decision to seek capital punishment against James Holmes. But the guy in the eye of the storm when it comes to capital punishment, a leading Republican star, and my friend, George Brockler. Welcome to 710 KNUS.
It is good to be here, Craig.
We're talking about Jim Peters, the late Jim Peters, and I'm wondering your thoughts. You are a successor to Jim Peters. You were at the funeral. His son spoke magnificently. Wow, what courage. And you could see Jim in the way his son spoke. But I couldn't help but think with all the accomplishments of Jim Peters, his obituary talked about Nathan Dunlap and that was the case that was right at the top of the list. What do you know about Jim Peters, how he felt about capital punishment, and how he felt when John Hickenlooper decided that Nathan Dunlap's verdict should be reprieved, I guess is the term?
A couple things. You know, Jim was a very good man. He was a good district attorney, not just because he had skills in the courtroom and he had the ability to discern strong cases from weak, but he had the ability to discern right from wrong because of who he was. And I think you saw the outpouring of support and honor at that service last Friday. It was an indication of how many people really appreciated who Jim Peters was, not just as a person or a friend or a father or a brother or even a son, but as a neighbor, as a member of this community. I never had any conversations with Jim about the process of making the decision. I did have conversations with him and with Eva Wilson, who was the other prosecutor on that case, about what to do in preparation for the governor's decision regarding clemency. And I know that they were both so invested for the reasons you've identified as to why this case needed to continue to move forward towards the just result, and not a just result because they said so or some judges said so, but because 12 members of the community that Nathan Dunlap's own expert attorneys helped pick said so. And one small correction, you'll remember this case got sent down to El Paso County. And so it was even 12 people who are farther removed from the horror of this event to make that decision. And even they said he deserved to have death. You know, Jim was Catholic, as you pointed out. Pretty sure Attorney General Southers is. I know that I am. And, you know, just I had to make this decision recently. And it is not a small decision. I think it is easy for the other side of this issue to vilify prosecutors as just some knee-jerk reactionaries who want to kill everyone, and that's not true. I take seriously the idea that I'm the only person on the planet Earth who could set in motion the attempt to have the machinery of government take another citizen's life. That's a big deal for me. It's why we have elected district attorneys. It's because they're answerable to the community. And so I met with the priest from our church, and I talked with him about it because I had serious concerns about, does this impact my soul in some way? Does this, is this a blemish on me for going down this road? And the conversation we had is one I'm sure, Attorney General Southers and Jim dealt with too, and it was no. I mean, for reasons that General Southers referenced, like the issues of self-defense, the church has not always been opposed to the idea of something called lex talionis, which is that the state can defend itself, and that a person acting in their capacity as a servant of the government doesn't act in their own personal capacity. I'm not choosing to go into someone's cell and kill them. It's different. It's the government, and I'm just merely a representative of that. But even those things don't make for a completely restful night sleeping as you think about, what am I going to do? And we're coming up on the one-year anniversary of that decision. Oddly, Judge Sylvester at the time said that we had to make this election by April 1st. I don't know why he chose April Fool's Day, but there it was. And so we're coming up on that. We're about 11 months removed from it. And again, it's not a small decision.
No, it's not. And speaking of committed Catholics, Bob Beaupre, who announced for governor, he and I have talked about capital punishment. And he's nobody is thrilled about the prospect of putting somebody to death. I think it's sad that the state, with all its awesome power, would have to be involved in such a thing. But in certain rare cases, and the cases are small enough in Colorado that I have not seen abuses by Colorado prosecutors. And you can contemplate, maybe it's a political thing. Maybe a DA wants to rise through the ranks, and this is the way to do it. I think Jim Peters is a good example. He was just a committed prosecutor. He didn't do it for political gain. He did it because he felt it was the right thing to do under that circumstance. And I know Bob Beaupre would sign that death warrant for Nathan Dunlap because, for people who weren't around over 20 years ago for that heinous crime, and I believe Nathan Dunlap had also robbed a Burger King on Mississippi in Aurora, it wasn't his first crime. It was a terrible, premeditated mass murder. And what about Jim last year? Jim Peters was alive. Jim Peters came down with cancer, and it took him way too fast. But when John Hickenlooper made his reprieve decision, did you get to talk with Jim Peters about it?
No, I know he was disappointed from talking with Eva Wilson on it as well. And Eva's still a senior chief deputy on the First Judicial, so I see her far more frequently. Jim got sick shortly after that. He was diagnosed, I think, in the summer, and this had just happened in May. But I can only imagine how crushing it must feel to have invested that much effort and emotion into something like this, even from the juror standpoint, and to have someone two decades removed get weak in the knees about the political ramifications of this and punt on it. I mean, look, honestly, I would have been outraged had the governor made a decision to grant clemency and convert the sentence to life. And by the way, I think that's going to happen no matter what. I don't think John Hickenlooper leaves office without sparing the life of Nathan Dunlap, and I'll make that prediction right here. But had he made that decision, it at least would have been, one, a decision, and two, brought closure to these many victims who for two decades have tried to develop some psychic scab over this sucking chest wound of horror and emotion. And he pulls it off twice, one to have him come in and tell him, please don't grant clemency, and then a second time to call them in and say, this is a tough one. I just can't seem to make a decision, so I'm going to let someone not me make a decision down the road. That's not an act of courage. It's not an act of leadership. It is as political a decision as you can make.
And I think many people started looking at John Hickenlooper in a different way. Bob Crowell was the father of the late Sylvia Crowell, one of the victims of Nathan Dunlap, he said this.
The judicial system, as far as defense is concerned, is broken. And that makes Colorado a chicken state. We have a chicken governor.
That's Bob Crowell. And wow, the pain that the victims had to experience as a result of the governor's decision. As I understand it, John Hickenlooper met with the victims, and the victims just told them their feelings. Imagine waiting the better part of 20 years for justice to come through. You sit through the trial, you await all the appeals. It just seems cruel and unusual for these victims to have to go through this. Do you stay in touch with the victims now, George?
We have in this way. And again, I want to respect them and the ability to deal with this. I mean, I think constant contact with us, even though we do it in the most positive and I think benevolent way, is still a reminder of this crime and this case and the injustice that the governor has visited upon them through his inability to make a decision. So we've contacted them on different things. You know, there was a bill that was offered by Representative Szabo that would have somehow curtailed or attempted to curtail the governor's reprieve power. And I'm happy to talk about how, you know, let me just say this. This reprieve, this is how ridiculous this is. There's a reprieve power in our Constitution, no doubt about it. There's an ability to grant clemency, an ability to pardon, an ability to grant a reprieve. This reprieve power, we cannot find a published use of this since 1895. And when it was used in another capital case for like a 60-day reprieve to allow them to research an issue that prior to that hadn't been brought up through the courts or any other means. That makes sense, right? That's what the reprieve power is for. But if you read this executive order by the governor, it goes out of its way to say, I'm not granting this because of Nathan Dunlap. I'm doing this because I don't like our death penalty law. And that is an abuse of his authority. And it's frankly, it should cause Coloradoans to have concerns about what role the rule of law plays in this case. But back to the victims. We have talked to them about any issues they would have with a bill like that, any support they want to provide. But by and large, I just don't want to keep reopening this wound for them. And we're here for them. If they ever have questions or they want to do something, we'll definitely be a resource for them. But we try to keep a little bit of distance, especially after what happened less than a year ago out there at the Gold Dome.
I expect you agree with me that reasonable people can disagree about capital punishment.
No doubt. I mean, I think there are people that are pro-life, start to stop. I have huge respect for those people. I completely understand that.
The problem with the other side, the committed opponents of capital punishment, they disagree. They don't think reasonable people can disagree about capital punishment. They think that you are engaged in an act of premeditated murder and that anything and everything is fair to stop you from killing somebody. So when you get involved in capital punishment, the attacks come. They come at George Brockler through the Denver Post. And then John Hickenlooper apparently is one of those people who now says, you know, if you really think about capital punishment, you're against it.
I think that Colorado is in the middle of a conversation about it. And my reservations about having a law passed when so many people were so divided over it and so many people didn't have the facts, right? We can't find a study. Every study we've seen demonstrates that there is no deterrence to having a death penalty in your state.
See, he wanted to have a conversation. He claimed he wanted to have a discussion about the death penalty. I've invited him on the times that I've hosted because I think it is a good thing to discuss, but I don't think he really does want to discuss it. Do you?
No, I don't. But listen, if you listen to just those few sentences, there is so much worth reviewing in there. One, it's that same liberal hubris of, you know what, if you just knew what I knew, you'd think like me. There's no room for what you've described as an honest disagreement about something. But you heard that in there when he says, well, a lot of people didn't have the facts. And what he means is, you didn't hear what I heard. And if you did, you'd think like me. The other part of that is when he says, you know, Colorado's in the middle of a discussion. We're divided on this. It was days after that comment that the Quinnipiac poll came out and said we were somewhere between 2-1 to 7-3 in favor of keeping the death penalty. There are bills that he has championed and signed into law that have far less support than he would have just had to have looked to our support for the death penalty to make it happen.
See, I know one person he discussed it with.
George Brockler came in and talked to me and was certainly had a great deal of clarity on how deeply he had thought about it and how much he had examined these same issues. He doesn't need me to come in and opine, provide an opinion on whether on what he's doing.
Well, you're one guy he talked to about it, but you brought up an interesting thing, George, and after the break, I want to, one, invite callers, 303-696-1971. George Brockler will take your calls. Do you think capital punishment figures into this gubernatorial race? George brought it up, the rule of law. Do you think John Hickenlooper respected it here? Do you think Barack Obama respects the rule of law? Is the rule of law an important issue in politics right now? It is for me. Craig, in for Dan, 710, KNUN, the DA for the 18th Judicial District, George Brockler. You know, so many people refer to you as the Arapahoe County DA, which you surely are, but you're the DA of three other counties, too. Does that always strike you as odd, especially now that Douglas County has gotten so big?
It does in the way that when I go to those other counties, they always bring it up to me. They're like, why do they keep calling you the Arapahoe County DA? I think in part it's a function of the fact that, I mean, just statistically, 3 out of every 4 felony cases we file in the jurisdiction come out of Aurora, not even Arapahoe County, out of Aurora. So most of the stuff that we're on TV for and the news for that people are talking about takes place in Arapahoe. And I think the other thing is, people just don't know what the 18th Judicial District means. Arapahoe, they can picture. But, you know, Douglas, Elbert, and Lincoln are three very important counties. They're very diverse counties. The state demographer says that by 2016, Douglas County is going to be bigger than Boulder in terms of population, with a population of about 320,000. It is the most significant jurisdiction from the standpoint of population. Maybe size-wise, we'd be bigger than the state of Connecticut by square mileage. Population-wise, we'd be, I think, the 47th largest state in the country with about 930,000 people. That's 47% bigger than Denver. And I know Denver's the epicenter. And frankly, this will be another issue with the gubernatorial campaign, is that everything right now that people are feeling feels like it starts and stops with an analysis of how does this impact Denver? Whether it's rural electric, whether it's gun laws, it's all about how does Denver get affected by this? And I get it. It's a big, important city. It's the capital. It's the center of big business. I understand all that. But I think you're going to start to hear people talk about why it's important we actually think of Colorado as a state and not just the area surrounding Denver. And that's where you get guys like Cory Gardner from Yuma, who's running, Bob Beaupre, no Denverite himself, also running. In fact, most of the candidates for governor, with the exception of maybe Secretary Gessler, are from outside of Denver.
Interesting stuff, and I did not realize the huge percentage of felony cases coming out of Aurora that you guys prosecute, and you don't have all of Aurora.
We have about 88% of the population of Aurora.
What about that proposal for a city and county of Aurora? How would that impact jurisdictions when it comes to judicial districts and prosecution?
You know, there's three different possibilities. One is, Aurora could decide, if we're going to be a city and county, we'd like to be our own judicial district. I think that's the least likely of the three options. The second option might be to say we'd like to affiliate with the 17th Judicial District, which is Dave Young up in Adams County. I don't think they'd do that either, for the obvious reason that the vast majority of their city falls in Arapahoe County. I think what's most likely to happen is, and I think it makes good economic sense too, is that a city and county of Aurora would likely affiliate with the 18th Judicial District, which I think makes a lot of sense. We do most of their work anyway.
We've been talking a lot about Bob Beaupre, and you brought up the governor's race, which is on everybody's mind. Bob Beaupre was in studio talking about his candidacy. There are other candidates, and they weighed in over the weekend on a debate that was hosted by Fox 31. Eli Stokols was one of the moderators, and the Colorado Springs Gazette. And there are a lot of good people running for Colorado governor, and each one of them wants to make capital punishment an issue. Here's a good guy, Greg Brophy, state senator, talking about that.
Now, when he made those remarks at the Capitol, he was basically saying it's been 15 years since the state held an execution and that the three men on death row perpetrated crimes similar to those of other folks who have been sentenced to life in prison, not to death. Why should Nathan Dunlap, Sir Mario Owens, and Robert Ray die for their crimes? Greg?
Because they committed heinous murders. And Governor Hickenlooper failed his leadership test when he wouldn't take a stand with regard to the death penalty. I mean, and he told us he was in favor of the death penalty, and then he takes this kind of an action. Just have the courage of your convictions and do the right thing. Nathan Dunlap is a heinous mass murderer. He killed four people in cold blood. If I had been governor, we would have had an execution about 6 months ago.
Greg Brophy talking about Nathan Dunlap. He also brought up Robert Ray and Sir Mario Owens. Those were convictions obtained out of Arapahoe County. And now we have the James Holmes case, and you have another death penalty case, the Montour case. I know you can't talk about pending cases, but capital punishment opponents always bring that up. Why so many in your jurisdiction and not others? What's your response?
Well, look, I'm not the one that picks the scene where these crimes are committed. I can't help that these individuals decided to pick Aurora or Arapahoe County, or in one case, the Lyman Correctional Facility, to commit their murders. All we can do is respond to them. Look, we're the only metro area judicial district that has a prison in it. So that's why we would get the cases where there are prisoner on prisoner or prisoner on guard murders. That's one thing no other jurisdiction in the metro area has to deal with. Frankly, north or south up I-25, you'd struggle to find that. You know, the other issue, though, too, is you find some of these outlying jurisdictions where it is possible that heinous crimes would occur, mass murders, serial murders, and you find offices that are a significant fiscal disadvantage from the public defenders who show up against them. Now, state public defenders are financed by the state. And if you look at over the last 10 years, despite the fact that the number of felony cases filed in this state has gone up by maybe 2 or 3%, their budget has more than doubled. Their full-time employees have more than doubled, and these rural district attorneys are struggling with the realities of the economies in which they live instead of having a Denver-based tax structure funnel money out there to defend these killers and these murders. I think you would see more death penalty prosecution, certainly in the rural and surrounding areas, if there wasn't such a disparity in the funding and the ability to answer these charges. Just to give you a quick dollar amount, this year alone, the state of Colorado is poised to spend on public defenders and alternate defense counsel, who, as you know, maybe the listeners don't, they're taxpayer-funded defense attorneys when there's a conflict with the public defender's office for representation. We're going to spend more than $100 million this year just on those groups on criminal defense. What you and I don't know, what we can't know, because I don't think an audit has ever been revealed to the public, is how much money the alternate defense counsel has thrown at the death penalty cases that they defend. We don't know how much they spend, but I'll tell you this. I feel it as someone who's answerable to the county commissioners and to the public with a fixed budget. I don't have some bank account where I can say, you know what, we're going to seek death in this case. I need another $1 million. I have to do it within the confines of my budget.
That's a big part of the capital punishment debate. It gets thrown at you. Look down in Texas. You have lawyers who are making $40 an hour. They're sleeping through the trials. And I always respond, I'm not here to defend Texas. I've been a Colorado prosecutor for 16 years, and even since I left, there's so few Colorado death penalty cases that I follow them, and I'm sensitive to abuses. But I'm well aware that the defense in Colorado is super well funded. The public defenders, highly skilled, highly committed to saving their clients' lives. And so that's what it's about. And they get that funding from the legislature. And I'd hate to see it where all Democrats are against the death penalty. And we know that they are not. Rhonda Fields, whose beautiful son Javad, along with his fiancée Vivian, were the victims of Robert Ray and Sir Mario Owens. She's somebody who's wrestled with capital punishment and come to the conclusion it's appropriate. Mitch Morrissey, the Democratic Denver District Attorney, he's seeking capital punishment for the main bad guy in a quadruple homicide at Pharaoh's Bar, which is on Colorado Boulevard, not far from Alameda. So it's not all Democrats, but it certainly is John Hickenlooper. To be fair to the other candidates who are running, Scott Gessler's a good man. I always enjoyed having him on our old radio show. He was asked about whether he, as governor, would sign a death warrant for Nathan Dunlap.
The people of the state of Colorado support the death penalty, and we support our juries and we support our judges to make the right decisions. And the governor did promise that he was going to support the death penalty, and when push came to shove, he waffled, and he wouldn't even make a decision and just kicked the can down the road. And that's not justice, and that's not fair to the families and the victims here. The fact of the matter is, we shouldn't have a governor that picks and chooses which laws he wants to enforce. We need to respect our laws and let that process go forward.
I think the Republicans are going to be united on this. And Scott Gessler brings up the point that I know you want to touch on, and it bothers the heck out of me with this president. The rule of law, it's got to mean something. Even a liberal like Jonathan Turley, a law professor, has said, what's going on? We have constitutional checks and balances. There's another delay in Obamacare, this executive order situation, and bringing it back to something more local, John Hickenlooper and the rule of law and his decision on Nathan Dunlap. It's bothersome, especially when he said that he could support capital punishment, and the people of Colorado overwhelmingly do. Speak about the rule of law, George.
Well, look, I agree with what you said. The bottom line is this. Either the words on the paper that we fight to get there through the legislature or through these constitutional amendments have power and limit what an executive can do, or they're really just guidelines, and a governor or a president can do whatever they want to do. I think we are far less free than we should be if you have people like the governor in this case, or the president, exercising powers in a way that they haven't been intended to be used, if they don't abide by the law. Let me say this, though, about what Greg and Scott said. I do think that the governor had an out here. You know, a man of courage, a person of principle, could have stood up at that podium back in May and said, you know, when I ran for governor, I said I was in favor of the death penalty, and from that theoretical standpoint of never having been here, I was, and I believed it in my heart. But I'll tell you what, sitting behind this desk and seeing this case come across my desk and realizing that although I'm not obligated to do a thing, I do have the ability to spare this life. As bad a life as it's been, I have the ability to spare it. And so I'm looking Colorado in the eye, and I'm saying, I've changed my mind. I don't think I'm pro-death anymore. I'm going to grant clemency here, and I'm willing to stand up in front of you for re-election, and you tell me if you agree or disagree. That's courage. That's leadership. Standing up and trying to navigate between two obvious and limited choices by using a 100-year-old power in a way that it was never intended to be used is political. It's calculated, and it's why people started to look at him not as this affable, fun-loving beermeister, but as this sort of glass-jawed, weak-in-the-knees guy who needs people to like him and simply can't stomach the idea that people would oppose him. This was the most tone-deaf decision I think this governor made up to that point. He's made others since, but this was it. And for them to then stand up and say, we did this because we knew it was going to start a conversation, that's absolutely silly and lacks credibility. The bottom line is this. This is the law of the state of Colorado. If you, when you take your oath and say, I uphold and defend the law, if you get to a place where you can do neither, your obligation to this state is to say, I'm stepping down. I can't do this anymore. Not to pass the buck to the next governor, whoever that may be. And we see the same thing with the president, by the way. They pushed through the Obamacare. You remember Pelosi standing up there and saying, well, we got to read it to find out what's in it. I guess that was true for the White House, too, because as they read it, they see a whole bunch of deadlines they're unprepared to meet, but they're afraid of the political ramifications. I think we're at a weird place here, a weird, scary place for the state and for the country. I would much rather have a governor who I disagreed with politically but felt bound by the law than I would to have even a Republican in there who feels like in some Machiavellian way, as long as I find the right ends, how I get there is irrelevant. And that's what we're seeing out of these two executives, and it's got to change.
Wow. To borrow a phrase from our president, you're fired up, ready to go.
Amen to that.
There was a lot of talk about you possibly running for governor. Bob O'Prey announced today, do we have a second announcement? You're fired up, ready to go against John Hickenlooper. What are you thinking?
I think that's probably the only thing I could do to make this an even more crowded field. No, look, I'm very happy that we have this many qualified candidates running. I'll tell you what, I am anxious to find the Republican who's going to rise to the top of this list, who can beat this governor and bring us back to being what we were up to this point, and that is Colorado. We don't follow the East Coast or the West Coast. We don't need to look downhill to come to the right conclusion. We're a state that believes in liberty, whether it's marijuana legalization, which I didn't agree with, but that's the law of the land, whether it's these gun laws. I disagreed with the gun laws, but look, as district attorney, if I stood up and I said, I disagree with these gun laws, I'm not going to prosecute people for violating them, didn't I just pull a Hickenlooper there? Didn't I just say, I disagree with the law, I know you put it on there, that's a conversation we're having. The numbers in favor of that law, by the way, are far less than the numbers in support of the death penalty. I should be voted out of office if I did something like that. This is a bigger deal than just these individual laws. This is about adherence to our state constitution, the federal constitution, and the idea that the law is bigger than the man. And I don't think we have that right now.
It's called the rule of law, and it's important. George Brockler went to law school. So did I. So did Dan Kaplan. So I'm filling in today. We will take your calls, 303-696-1971. Who do you think the best choice is for Colorado governor? What do you think about John Hickenlooper's death penalty decision regarding Nathan Dunlap? Do you think that should be an issue in the gubernatorial campaign? On the other side, we're back, 710. I didn't just meet George Brockler. I met him through the radio. I've had so many interesting experiences. Craig Silverman here, Dan Kaplis with a day off. We used to do a show called Kaplis and Silverman, and got to know Bob O'Prey. Bob O'Prey was in the studio. He's running for governor. I think he'd be a hell of a good Colorado governor. One of the big issues for me that I like about Bob is that he put it all on the line to try to see to it that Barack Obama was not reelected. But he was. And the guy is a charming guy. He's a good speaker. He likes to disarm his opponents with little jokes. George and I have been known to do that as well. Remember that debate he had with Mitt Romney? Tried to make Mitt Romney look foolish when Mitt Romney said, hey, I'm worried about Russia.
When you were asked what's the biggest geopolitical threat facing America, you said Russia. Not Al-Qaeda, you said Russia. In the 1980s are now calling to ask for their foreign policy back because, you know, the Cold War has been over for 20 years.
Russia, I indicated, is a geopolitical foe. Not a,
number one.
Excuse me. It's a geopolitical foe. And I said in the same paragraph, I said, and Iran is the greatest national security threat we face. Russia does continue to battle us in the UN time and time again. I have clear eyes on this. I'm not going to wear rose-colored glasses when it comes to Russia or Mr. Putin.
Boy, I wish Mitt Romney had become president. And he talked about Iran. Iran that gets support from Russia. And Iran that AIPAC winding up its meeting in Washington, D.C. I was there, I don't know, it was 2011. I watched Barack Obama speak. I watched Benjamin Netanyahu speak. Netanyahu spoke after that to a joint session of Congress. And what was the plan that everybody was united on? Let's not have to go to war. Let's not involve the military again. Let's use sanctions. And then a sanctions program was put in. It went through the Congress. And then the sanctions were working, and the Iranian regime was suffering. And then what happened out of nowhere? Barack Obama on his own conducts secret negotiations, calls off the sanctions, give the Iranians their money back. And now they're still marching toward nuclear weapons, in my judgment. He goes around the rule of law. And no war, no battle is really won when you have a chief executive who can undermine it. We're talking about John Hickenlooper undermining the decision on Nathan Dunlap. George Brockler in the studio. George Brockler, also a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserves. He served over in Afghanistan.
Iraq.
Oh, in Iraq.
Yeah.
I apologize.
That's all right.
What do you think's going on in the world? I'm sure you've seen what's going on with Mr. Putin and with the Middle East, Iran, Afghanistan, Iraq.
It feels like we are seeing the end result of what I think was the president's position all along, and that was to diminish us as a world power and really bring us in line with what he perceives to be a better worldview, and that is that every country is equal. I mean, the idea that he couldn't defend American exceptionalism, because you know what? Every country thinks they're exceptional, which is nonsense. But the idea that we're going to diminish ourselves so that we wield no more power than Switzerland or Canada or Trinidad and Tobago, I think that's the end goal here. And we're seeing how the rest of the bad parts of the world respond to that. And that is, Putin has all but flipped off the country and said, come get me. I'm massing troops on the Ukrainian border. What are you going to do about it? And we keep saying things like, we are going to talk louder and louder. We are, John Kerry will be very unhappy. And it doesn't seem to work.
That is a good Kerry impression. And to see it in person where you elongated your face was really something. I think that America is exceptional. And what has made America exceptional? Rule of law. We've talked about that. Our free market capitalism system, I think that's inspired us, and a strong military. I was really worried about Chuck Hagel taking over, and I wish AIPAC would have opposed Chuck Hagel, but they got talked out of it by Barack Obama, who's kind of used and abused AIPAC, and hopefully they're starting to fight back. You're a member of the military. What do you think of these proposed cuts?
Well, I think they're damaging. I think the idea that at a time when we have greater uncertainty coupled with the ability of even small rogue countries to unleash devastating terrorism in the form of whether it's taking over planes, dirty bombs, nuclear, biological, or chemical attacks, the idea that we're going to draw our forces down to pre-World War II levels, I think, again, is an abdication of our role and our obligation to the rest of the Western civilization, frankly. I mean, the idea that, and the world, the idea that any country can defend themselves from these ne'er-do-wells is false. We have a special place in this world. It's why we spend so much of our treasure, our taxes, on a military, is to not just defend us, but to defend our allies, defend our interests. I know there's a lot of people out there who feel like, not a lot of people, there's a handful of loud people that think that our prominent role in the world is a negative. But I want you to picture the last 70 years without a United States of America. I mean, it seems to me we're listening to a lot more Wagner.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I wouldn't be listening. I probably wouldn't be around. It's a scary world. America is better for having a strong military. And when you announce it, our enemies notice, and there are enemies out there. George Brockler in-house. He's involved in so many things. Yesterday, he got involved in the sentencing of Stevie Vigil. You remember her? She gave a gun to Evan Ebel that he used to kill two good men. We'll talk about that on the other side. 710 KNUS.
KNUS.
Dan Don, Craig Don, George Brockler dancing in the studio. Those are some good moves, George. Did you watch Farrell sing this song at the Academy Awards the other night?
I didn't. I was a solo parent while my wife was out of town with four kids. We watched Thor. We did not watch the Academy Awards. The kids would not have suffered through that.
It had its moments, and that's a pretty good song that actually comes from Despicable Me, a movie I watched with my son, Samuel. Let's talk about Stevie Vigil. She was the woman who was responsible for giving a gun to Evan Ebel. She got prosecuted. I was surprised to read your name in the paper involved in that case. It was a federal case. How did you get involved?
You know, it started off as a state prosecution, and Assistant District Attorney Mark Hurlburt, who's no stranger to the news, you know, he was one of the prosecutors on Kobe Bryant, was DA up in the 5th Judicial District for a decade. He was on the case, and we started analyzing our laws versus the feds. The bottom line is this: the most prison that Stevie Vigil could have received under the state system would have been 3 years. And with our probation eligibility after a long weekend in prison, it seemed like she was going to have virtually no ramifications for this conduct. So the feds were also very interested in prosecuting her. They had deferred to us, and we had a conversation. And the bottom line is we thought maybe our laws aren't where they should be in this particular area. Maybe there's a better opportunity here to have a bigger message than just in Arapahoe County. We could make this statewide, maybe even region-wide. So the feds got involved, charged her. She got a 27-month sentence yesterday, which, look, with all respect in the world due to the court, I would have liked to have seen more time. But under the federal system, she's going to do 85% of that. So you can do the math. She's going to do more time in federal prison than she'd have done under our state laws for the same thing.
Well, give us the facts on the case. How do you know that she knew that Evan Ebel was a felon? And did she know what he intended to do with that gun?
I don't think she had any idea what he intended to do with it, but I think she knew he was troubled, if not violent. I think she definitely knew he was a felon from her own statements and the statements of those around her who knew about her relationship with Evan and other conversations that we were able to get access to while Evan was in custody and from some other relationships that we developed. It was no doubt that she knew he was a felon. Here's the bigger thing, though. Look, just by chance, I helped prosecute along with Steve Jensen, the two guys that sold the Tech DC-9 handgun to Klebold and Harris. They didn't know what Klebold and Harris were going to do. If they did, we'd have charged them as accomplices or accessories in one way or another. But they each went to prison for 6 years, Mark Manis did, and Phil Duran went for 4.5 years to prison for the virtually the same kind of conduct, which is when you provide a handgun to someone that shouldn't have one, you really ought to be judged by the worst thing that they do with it. And I had really hoped that that would sort of be the sentence that came out of this. I would, on these kinds of cases, a sentence that shocks the community is the one that best serves the community. Had Stevie Vigil gotten 6 years in federal prison, I think people would have taken note in a way that maybe today it's a front page story and people go, huh, and move on.
Well, should we then get to all the topics, including a night that George and Marcia and my wife Trish and I went to see Bill O'Reilly and Dennis Miller.
That was awesome.
And we went backstage, and I introduced Bill O'Reilly to George, and immediately launched into a discussion of Jessica's Law, which was in the news yesterday. But
thanks for having me.
I won't forget that moment with Bill O'Reilly and you backstage. I think it was at the Buell. Anyway, it was a pleasure being in. Casey, Chelsea, thanks for your help. Dan Kaplis will be back tomorrow. Steve Kelly, 1 o'clock today. Don't miss that show. Bob O'Pray will be on again. Bob O'Pray running for governor. Pete gets it going at 5 a.m. on 710 KNUS.